Mr. Martin Parker, Reel 2.
So, I introduced Mr. Yakovsky to indicate to some various people. He introduced himself there, more or less. Because when the Lords of Timber came together, he came. He didn't sit on these lorries at all, but he came in separately. Talked to various people, and a lot of people had businesses outside and couldn't go there. So he was, presumably, I don't know, because he told me later, after the ghetto was destroyed, he told me our story. I knew the man very well. He had a villa outside Warsaw. He had something hidden there, and he couldn't go himself, and told Mr. Yakovsky to find where the money was. And Mr. Yakovsky did this. Let me show you how clever he was. He had a friend, a policeman, came to that house, said, there was a man who was a caretaker, told him, look, I had information that some guns are hidden somewhere here. If I find any, God help me. He was wearing, Mr. Yakovsky was wearing a leather jacket. He might fear that he was a German himself, not very German. He said to the policeman, watch this man. He let him not move at all. I have a look back and I see whether I can find the arms. He went to the room, maybe under the chimney, somewhere under the fireplace, and so they found gold, dollars, coins. He took the packet, put it into the briefcase. Came back to him and said, I didn't find anything at the moment, but I may come again. Don't tell me, frightened caretaker. Give a few pounds to the policeman and all. And I didn't hear anything from Mr. Yakovsky what he did with the money. He probably brought the money to him and he shared it out. And got a nice handsome cut. That was all the text that gives you the idea how clever Mr. Yakovsky was. Mr. Yakovsky had a wife who was Jewish. She pretended she was a Christian. And she had a sister who worked outside the ghetto, in a shop, in a company, importing artificial teeth from Switzerland. So, pretending she was a Christian, she must have had some documents. She worked there. She didn't look Jewish. Her sister, who married Mr. Yakovsky, looked Jewish. She didn't. Make the long story a little shorter. When in 1922, shall I tell you what went on in the ghetto as well? You want to know? Every Jew was supposed to go once a week to work for the Germans. Once or twice a week, but getting nothing for it, of course, just to. This was arranged through a Jewish burgomeister, who was an engineer, a professional. And he had to take it if he was appointed by the Germans. He became the leader of the ghetto. and he had what to do what they never told him. They sent me once a week, every week, a piece of paper saying, you have to be a certain place at the entrance of the ghetto, to the ghetto, and go outside and work for the Germans and then come back. Each time I hired somebody, gave him this, because there were hundreds of people who didn't have an air or anything. They were hungry. Less than £5, five zloty. He gave him 6 zloty, 8 zloty, depends. And he went with his card and said he was Mr. So-and-so. And he went for me, and he found my brother-in-law, and we didn't go, we didn't work one day for the others. Because we could afford to go. Others didn't afford where to go. So this duty didn't exist for me. I didn't work for the Germans in one day. This working there was not work. I was just sitting at the telephone, directing, telling them what to do with the timber, where to go, where to send it, because in the ghetto they had various places. And also, there was one man whose name was, I forgot his name. He was working in the same company, but he had some connections there, and he was selling the timber for people who didn't have anything to heat the house in winter. So the good timber was turned into poorer. There's a lot of forest. They cut the timber into wood. This was not illegal. Very illegal, you see. What I had to do, this was the only profit I could make by sending, asking, ordering the lorry to go to this place instead of this place. I got something for this.
What was your sort of living conditions at this time? Were you able to get enough food? And
we were lucky because I prepared the food. They were not giving rations. We could get a quarter of a pound, of a kilo, call me, a quarter of a kilo. A kilo is 2.4 pounds. 2.4 pounds a kilo. So you could get a share from the government, from the Jewish community. You had to stand in the queue for days to get this piece of bread. And a few potatoes, frozen potatoes, or other rotten vegetables. Yes, I didn't have to do it. As I said, I prepared it before the war. I knew what the war can do. I suffered hunger in the First World War. I was then young. I was 9 or 10 years old, and my mother sent me to my grandmother in a village near Warsaw. That was easier to get bread, and very good dark bread, which is excellent to eat, tasty. And I didn't suffer hunger. Or I could eat sometimes the skin of the bread left when in the house, when there was nothing to eat. What to survive the First World War only because my mother had foresight to pay a barrel of sauerkraut. And sauerkraut is a whole barrel of it. And they were eating, she was boiling this for lunch, and for eating me a piece of bread that we had. then we survived the First World War.
But in the ghetto, were you able to smuggle food through and
but
different
there
things?
There was a smuggling at night. The Poles were smuggling through the walls. Bread, potatoes, vegetables, but at a price. They sold it at a price later. Only rich people could afford it. So you can imagine there was a starvation in the ghetto. It's awful starvation. People were walking the streets and falling down and dying. People were walking on the street and falling down and dying. And every day, the Jewish, those who were appointed by the Germans, had some men going around the town and collecting the dead people. And they had some push carts. And every day they had some 10, 15 corpses collecting from the street. My late wife saw terrible scenes and told me once. And on the street in Warsaw there, not near us, somewhere else, there were, a woman died and the baby was sitting near her and crying, "Mama, Mama." And the mother was dead. My wife was crying there and came home. It wasn't easy to move, but she cried. Of course, we were hardened ourselves, seeing all this disaster. The mother was dead and the child was sitting. I didn't understand why the mother doesn't want to answer. Doesn't answer. Mother was crying. And where we lived was the center of everything. Hundreds of people milling the street here and back, begging loudly. Somewhere wrapped up in rags. And two sisters were walking here and they were singing songs which I was surprised to hear. They must have had. I knew them, but I didn't go out very much, very often, only when I went for lunch. I have one on a record. It is taken from Hoffman's Tales of Hoffman. And the two girls were going around and singing this Rapner Drags. Musicians were going around on the streets playing and begging for money. Qualified musicians. There was a theater secret, wasn't allowed, playing music, the best type of music, in the street, in the yard, at the house, because those houses were squares, and they were playing music. And people saw from these windows money for them to buy themselves. And bread became more and more expensive. Vegetables more and more expensive. And those smuggled in on the Polish side were extra, ultra expensive. Of course, for the danger. They're in danger all the time, the smugglers. Of course, they could be shot.
Was there disease, you know, the fact that there were so many dead?
Well, I'll tell you this. What my wife was afraid of, that I would catch a disease, which in one part of the street, the people were selling their bed, part of their bedding, the covers from the bedding, and so on. And showing them off what it is, other people bought. Crazy to buy without such situations. And one day I came home and I had the heat, hooked and coat the typhoid. And a lot of people of my age, they're dying. Some of my friends were dying. What my wife did is, we had an alcove, a dark alcove. My mother-in-law's flat. And I was hidden in this alcove. This disease was to be declared to the police. And people in my wife knew if she declared me that I was taken away to the hospital, I would never come back. She'd lose me. She didn't declare. And every day, twice daily, came somebody to give me injections, and a doctor came. Doctor in Poland existed, which doesn't exist here. Something below a doctor. He has some education, but didn't finish studies. He came, so they called it strangely a felcher, which is a not a doctor, but somebody who knows something about medicine. He did only the injections. He was a friend of ours. And each injection cost, and the doctor cost, and so on, had to pay for all this. And after a month, I survived. The danger in this illness was when the temperature dropped suddenly. And somewhere, that was the crisis. If you survived this moment, you were okay. And I survived. And later, after this, from all the injections I got here at my back, I saw a swelling full of pus, which the doctor, a friend of ours, a surgeon, had to open without any narcotics and so on, if you didn't have. So the operation was done. I was shouting, but the pus came out, pushed it all out. And I also had seen the things which were going on myself. I got several swellings on my neck.
Yes, if you could just leave that, because it crackles.
And be very painful. Full of pus, because my nerves couldn't sustain it. And I had several operations on my neck, open. I had to squeeze out the pus. I didn't have any narcotics, anything to stop the pain. So, to make the story shorter, because I could go on and on, because what was going to want to know together, terrible things. I told you about people collecting from the dead.
Yes, what happened to the dead? Where were they buried?
They were taken away to the cemetery, and a big hole was opened and put them all in. Not separate. They didn't know who they were, didn't have names even. Take a big hole, put in some disinfectant, and buried them.
How about things like these services? Water and electricity and telephone.
Eventually, and a year and a half it didn't have any electricity. We used oil, a lamp, like the old fashioned lamps. And we're sitting in with a candle if we had. We didn't have candles, we had such a lamp. Otherwise, you could see me in the complete darkness. There was no electricity in the ghetto. It was in the Polish area. One day, I got permission through my director at the factory of Schilling, where I belong, to go out. And Mrs. Idzikowska, she telephoned to that telephone, or to her husband, she told me, I don't know, to buy her a bar of gold, 100 grams. And I was foolish for not agreeing to do it. And I put the bar of gold in my shoe. And I took off my ring and put it in my pocket. I came to the border, the gendarme. Into my pocket, I found the ring, took it out. First thing, he didn't ask me to rub my shoes. I came to the Mr. Jukowski and gave her this gold. I hoped to get the Mr. Jukowski some money, didn't get anything. And I gave her the gold and he said, the price is too high. I said, look, if you don't agree to the price which I paid, I have to take it back. And I don't want to risk again my life. Take it. Hold it. Take it. She realized I was cross with her. She paid me back. Didn't add a penny, I swear to Almighty.
You mentioned the Jewish police. Who were the people who worked as Jewish police? You know, were they a certain type of...
people who were afraid, they had nothing to do. And being a Jewish police, they had some advantages. They gave them some bread, they gave them some vegetables and so on. This was the advantage they had. But for this, at a later day, they had to pay and send away and what. When in 19, let me have a look at this.
September 1914.
Yes. Arranged a quarantine in the ghetto. What they did, I really don't understand. They didn't let us out. Few and few of us could go out. And the water existed, but boiled water cost money. We could do it because we had coal. As few, others couldn't. So can you imagine the not a lot of hygiene in the ghetto. And because of this, more and more people were dying. Until one day in 1942, I go over these things. On 22nd of July, 1942, posters on the walls.
It's because the rustling spoils it, you see.
Posters on the walls. That because Jews cannot survive the war in the ghetto, they have to go to the east, where they will work, have a decent living, and survive the war this way. A hinder can survive the war. And what is more, as anybody who comes will get two loaves of bread and marmalade is all made of vegetables. Hundreds of people went voluntarily for the loaf of bread, two loaves of bread. Those went, there was a certain point where they had to go there and they sent away, and nothing was heard from them. Mr. Jikorsky, who had friends, a lot of friends, Poles, told him that they saw wolves wagons passing the station not far from him. Was a station, a railway station. They had clothes with blood. He told me this. I heard this news before anybody else. I didn't want him to create a panic. I didn't say anything. And about my wife knew. And this poster appeared on the wall. We knew this was the end. Logic. And in fact, they gave the police, Jewish police, an order to bring every day 6,000 people. Compulsory. If they wouldn't bring the 6,000 people, they'd have to bring their own parents and relations. But these policemen became merciless. And they had also gone with them pulled cart with some wooden protection for people who wouldn't fall out. And they closed the house. And everyone in the house had to come down. And they went from door to door and pulled out people. And one of our acquaintances, also a friend, from that place where I was working, the same day, he lost his children. He and his wife lost their children, and the person who was taking care of the children. The same day, where people could afford, and they paid a lot of money trying to get them back. They paid. But the children were the same day sent away by wagon. And this was they were sent to Auschwitz. You heard about Auschwitz. In Polish Auschwitz, where they were destroyed, killed, murdered. We didn't believe in this. Kill people or nothing? Well, that's what we've done. And the result was that every day from that day onwards, we didn't know where, suddenly the house was, the street was blocked on both sides, and from went to house to house and dragged out people. This lasted a long time. Because we were in the ghetto then 250,000 people. Or 300,000 people, I don't remember. If I had there about 350,000 people in the ghetto. Pushed in the walls where normally 100,000 people lived. And I forgot to tell you that those Jews who lived in the Polish area got 2 weeks to move out in Jewish and forced to move out. So the Berlin can move to houses, flats, and so on. They live in Jewish, and the Christian moves out, they exchange flats. They got a small flat, the Jews, and the Christian got that beautiful house. And this gave and lasted 2 weeks only. And within 2 weeks, everybody had to move. You could see people walking the streets, couldn't find a flat, just walking. Hundreds. The because when few Christians lived among the Jews, and Jewish ghetto, Jewish parts of them.
The Jewish police, you know, you've described so well how they were responsible for the deportations, the deportees. How did you regard them? How did people look
upon
them? I couldn't
look at them even. But the ones, they saved my life once. When they were still, in the ghetto, were still tramways, electric tramways. This was 1940. Three officers came into the stopped in tramways and they went into this. They took out all men and told me also to go out. Instead of going where they wanted, I went backwards. And the German called me. Told me I will teach you a lesson.